Welcome to the PDPW podcast, brought to you by Professional Dairy Producers, dairy's professional development organization.
Thank you for the opportunity to be in conversation with you. And my name's Tom Thibodeau. I'm the Distinguished Professor of Servant Leadership at Viterbo University. And this morning, I'm very happy to talk to you about learning. Learning. The best thing for being sad, replied Merlin the magician, is to learn something. That's the only thing that never fails. You may grow old and trembling in your anatomies. You may lie awake at night listening to the disorder of your veins. You may miss your only love. You may see the world around you devastated by evil lunatics, or know your honor trampled in the sewers of baser minds. There's only one thing for it, then, to learn. Learn why the world wags and what wags it. That's the only thing that mind can never exhaust, never alienate, never be tortured by, never fear or distrust, never dream of regretting. Learning's a thing for you. How important and significant this is to be a lifelong learner. One of the fastest groups of growing people in our country demographically are people who are living to be 100. And many of the people that are talking with here this morning are going to have the opportunity, because of the advances in modern medicine and agriculture and ways of life, that our lives is being extended. But the people that have already passed to 100 years have told us these three things. One, if one is going to age healthily, one must develop a sense of humor. You must not learn to take everything so seriously. Alan Alda, when they talked about MASH, how could they keep the high level of comedy for 9 years? He said, we are always serious but never solemn. And you learn as you age that you must develop a sense of humor, to take the big things as the big things and the little things as the little things, but always remember to laugh. Secondly, as people age gracefully, what is it they have learned to do? And that is to learn to live with loss. You're going to grow older, you find your friends and family members have died. Sometimes you find yourself alone. You find yourself maybe losing your original home, having to move to a place where you can get a little bit more support. You learn to live with the loss of neighbors, or sometimes even in terms of your geography, if you go to a different part of the country to be joined by family. So they learn to live with loss. But what's really extraordinary in people who live to be 100 gracefully are people who continue to learn. You're understanding that the brain is a muscle as much as it is an organ. It has to be used. We're finding that people spend long periods of time in front of screens, whether it be computers or televisions. All of a sudden, the brain begins to atrophy because it needs to be exercised. Are we reading? Are we talking? Are we discussing? What are we thinking about? What are we journaling about? Where is our attention going? The marvelous sense that there's always something new to learn. Learn why the world wags and what wags it. That's the only thing they can never exhaust, never alienate, never be tortured by, never fear or distrust. How important it is to continue to learn, to continue to exercise our memories, the things that we've remembered and learned in the past, only to relearn them at a different stage in life. Isn't it exciting to be part of somebody who is constantly asking questions, is curious, who wants to learn a little bit more about you or your life story or the work that you do? There's always something new and more important to learn. There's a great educator in the 1960s by the name of Paulo Freire. And Paulo Freire has a marvelous book. It's a classic called Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And Paulo Freire was living in Brazil and got his master's degree in family counseling and family education. And on this one particular evening, he was invited out to a rural village. And so he dutifully drove out to this village, and there was a group of villagers sitting there in a community gathering room. And he gave his lecture like everyone who's just received their master's does. Oftentimes, those of us who have advanced degrees think we really know more than we do. Humility has to come with learning as well. And so he asked that beautiful question, any questions? Well, oftentimes, people ask don't have a question to ask, or what happens is that they ask one question and the expert in the room just repeats most of what's already been repeated, never asks for anything new. And so Freire stood up and said, are there any questions? And a gentleman stands up and raises his hand. He says, Mr. Freire, you live outside of Sao Paulo? He said, yes. Mr. Freer, you are married? Yes. Mr. Freer, you have maybe two, three children? He said, I have two. Mr. Freer, your house has three bedrooms? Yes. You have running water, Mr. Freer? Yes. You have electricity, Mr. Freer? Yes. You have a car that you drive to work every day? Yes. And this man went right on down the line and really described Paula Freer's lifestyle. And he said, Mr. Freer, I live in the village. We have one room. I have five children. We have no electricity or running water. Mr. Freer, I have to walk an hour each day to go to work, and when I get to work, I stand for an hour in line. And if I get picked for a day's work, Mr. Freer, I'm able to earn enough money to buy food for my family. My family eats that day. Sometimes Mr. Freer, my youngest son, he's 18 months, and he cries and cries because he hasn't had enough to eat or something has disturbed him. And sometimes, Mr. Freer, I have to spank my little boy because if he doesn't go to sleep, then I can't get up. And if I don't get up, I don't go to work. And if I don't go to work, my family does not eat. And then he said, am I a bad man, Mr. Freer? And Paul Freer, who had been talking to them about how to raise a family and how to discipline children, realized that he had took for granted that he knew everything that there was to know. He had forgot to learn, to listen, to pay attention to the needs of the people that are in front of him. So Paula Freer went back and contemplated this and decided to go back to the village, but this time he was going to go and listen to what was most important in people's lives. He called this listening and asking generative questions. Generative questions from the word generation or Genesis, what gives people life? Well, if you're going to talk about what gives people life, where do they talk about those things? Well, it's at the kitchen table, where we talk about the things that's most important in our lives, that what takes place in the break rooms at work, what's most important in our lives takes place at a cafe, takes place at a tavern, takes place in people's workplaces. And so Paula Freer went to where people lived and worked and just listened to what was most important in their lives. What are the generative questions that the people you surround yourself with today? What are questions asked? What are the questions that they're asking? And at different points in their life, they're asking different questions. People in their early 20s in college are asking about the meaning of their lives or what direction will they take? Will their life be secure? What are the opportunities that will be available to them? How do you start a relationship? Begin a family? All these generative questions. What's happening in terms of our natural world? What's happening in terms of our food supply? What are we going to do with the number of people that are migrating across the world and across borders? How do we keep ourselves safe? How do we reconnect with each other in an age of disconnectivity? How is it that we manage and use AI as a tool and not as a means ends of itself? Constant questions, being curious about another person and who they are and where they came from and what they've experienced. Generative questions, the things that give people life. And then he realized that this group of people that he was talking to needed a way in which to record what they believed. They were illiterate in that they didn't speak or write in Portuguese. And so what he did is he brought along an artist who would draw pictures. And so they go down and talk to the fishermen, and the fishermen would talk about their boat and how their little boat was what the means that provided a way for them to fish and provide for their families. Talked about the fishing and how it was and the abundance of fish or the lack of fish. How is it that you constructed a net? When do you go out to fish? And took all this knowledge about fishing and then would draw pictures. Pictures. And underneath the picture of the boat, he put the word of the boat. And he did the same thing with nets. And he did the same thing with fish. And he did the same thing with water. And by connecting their generative questions to images, people are not only able to read the word, they're able to read the world. How is it that we see our world these days? What are the images that we see flashed up in front of ourselves? Just previously, we're talking about the eclipse. Think of that amazing image that millions of people are going to want to pursue just to see what happens when the moon and the sun line up with each other. And you begin to realize that images are connected to imagination. what is it we can think about ourselves and our world? What are the images that we allow into our minds? How important it is then to look at the beauty of a mountain or children at play. How important it is to watch flowers bloom and to watch bees hover and then begin to pollinate. How important it is to look in terms of a long row of corn, or to see is in terms of animals giving birth, and you begin to see the whole cycle of nature, the images in our lives, and then we need to find the words from that. And so what Paulo Freire was able to do in a very short period of time was able to help people who had been illiterate how to read and write in 6 weeks by paying attention to what was significant in their lives, by painting images that they could identify with, and then the words that began to explain or describe the images. Talk about what is it that matters in the lives of other people. What are we learning each and every day? This is why the poet David White says, "One good word is bread for a thousand. Learning's the thing for you." But what's important about learning is not just an education of the mind, that's also an education of the heart. I just love this little quote that comes from an author who said, "Have you ever met one of those people that got all A's and flunk life?" Robert Coles, who teaches at Harvard and is a marvelous teacher, psychiatrist who has really paid attention to how is it that people create meaning in their lives. He received the Pulitzer Prize for just talking with children, asking children about their genetic questions. And so he has a marvelous book on the moral lives of children. How do children learn how to make decisions about what is right and wrong? The political lives of children, as people understand that politics comes from the Greek word polis, which means people. What is it that people want? Well, when you're playing on the playground, you have to kind of figure that out. What does everyone want? And what do children then do? They find a way in which to work it out. And he talked about the spiritual lives of children. Children live in a world of imagination. They have an understanding of the transcendent, that which is greater than themselves. Children live in the world of giants, and they're always looking up and trying to find meaning. And so he writes these three books. It's a trilogy. But he also teaches at Harvard University, where he takes his research, and he teaches it to young people who have privilege, who are preparing themselves for lives of leadership. And he writes this: "The issue of what is what we do with our thinking and our learning. How do we use our various gifts? To what service and on behalf of others as well as ourselves do we dedicate them? A few years ago, I visited Phillips Exeter Academy and met a wonderful woman who teaches chemistry there. She told me that sometimes in the lab, she'd see one of her students stop and try to help another student who was having trouble with the work. The teacher would wonder to herself how she could possibly tell university people about that unselfish student in such a way that we would think that qualities of character were the important things, not the numbers that come out of any kind of testing source." What is the problem? It's struggling with all the dilemma of the devil that we all carry within us, with the human pride and arrogance and smugness, and with the blindness that all too often goes with intellectuality. This is what's really important. What is it that we do with our intelligences? What is it we do with what we think? It has a direct impact on our behavior. Important then, what is it that I need to learn today? What are the things that I'm going to allow myself to think about, to meditate, to kind of turn over in my mind, because that will dictate my behavior. As you get older, and that's the point of stage of where I am in my life right now as I look at 73, you begin to realize that all of our lives are like a Dickens novel. All the past characters and all the plots come to be tied up in the final chapters. And in looking back, what is it that I've learned? What is it that I need now to pass on to my children, to my grandchildren, to my students? These are the lessons learned. These are the things that I still need to be curious about. I have to begin to understand how is it that technology is going to continue to influence my life and the lives of other people. Isn't it extraordinary? I would imagine if I'm able to live long enough, all I'll have to do is call up a car that will be self-driving. Will come in front of my house. I'll get in and I'll speak to the computer and the car will take me where I need to go. That's not beyond comprehension right now. And you begin to recognize that all these things that are changing are going to find new ways of learning and interacting. But what's important is that what has always been important, how do I live? And he goes on to write this. How many millions of ordinary mothers and fathers and workers have tried to make do using their wits, their moral intelligences maybe, against great odds? If only there was a correlation between genetic endowment of intelligence and goodness. But is there? How many of us are all too smart and yes, also weird, snotty, and selfish? In his novel, The Second Coming, the writer Walker Percy describes one of the characters of one of those people who got all A's and flunked life. How will we pass life? How will we learn to nourish one another and to care for one another and care for our children and be good to them? How can we be good enough to our children to inspire them to be good to others? Conduct. I could teach a snazzy lecture in a course called Moral Analysis. I could outline the exact function of the whole brain and yet walk out of class and still be a wicked person. That is, I could be a first-class skunk on the road driving or in my behavior to my wife, my friends, or my children. So I have to believe I need to pray and draw strength from all those ordinary people of this world who don't write books and aren't part of an intellectual community, but whose goodness has been part of this planet's life. How extraordinary it is for us to continue to learn to be human, to be good and kind, thoughtful, patient, accepting. Learn to take time to listen to the stories of others because there's so much I can learn from others that I do not understand. How important it is to be curious about our world and how it works. Isn't it extraordinary in terms of the spacecraft and the telescopes that are sending us back images of our world as how it began, that's asking us to reconsider the source of life and the whole of the universe? Think about the human person. Think about the ability of surgeons to do brain surgery without having to open up the skull, but by just microscopically able to move a stent to the brain and open up a blood vessel so that people are able to think and to live and to move. Think about how extraordinary it is that we can take microchips that can memorize all the knowledge of the universe and make it available to us. Learning's the thing for you, and how important it is because it helps us to generate life. It helps us to feed our imaginations. It helps us to enrich our lives and the lives of others. Learning's the thing for all of us. Well, as usual, it's always good having a conversation with you. You are a great listener, and I hope this morning you're able to learn a little bit.
Our thanks to Tom Thibodeau for today's message. Tom, a distinguished professor of servant leadership at Viterbo University. And for archive podcasts and more on-demand programs, and for more on the professional development for today's dairy producer, head to PDPW's free website at pdpw.org. Until next time, have a safe and productive week.